This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. In today's episode, Reggie comments on the profundity of direct experience. He says that when we give up our ideas about reality, direct experience becomes our most trusted guide and teacher. This talk was given at the 2005 Winter Datun, a month-long retreat held in Crestone, Colorado.
When we enter into this kind of space of meditation, it's a very ambiguous situation. We don't know if we're completely freaked out or we're completely peaceful. We don't know if we're getting sick or actually we're fine. We don't know if we're happy. We don't know if we're sad. And we really can't quite make out if we actually like people or we hate them. This kind of ambiguity and uncertainty is actually the human mind in its intelligent state. We're beginning to discover how things actually are, because things are not one way or the other. They're not solid. We may not be certain if we exist or if we don't exist. We may not be certain if we're the greatest person in the world or the worst. It's an attitude of groundlessness and openness and uncertainty. And I invite you to welcome that uncertainty and to abide in it. Usually in life, we feel so invested in pinning everything down. We want to know where we are, we want to know where other people are, and we want to know how things are. But actually, that's an incredible stupidity and ignorance. When we convince ourselves that something is a certain way, we've gone to sleep. And we've disconnected ourselves from our own intelligence. You might think it's not possible to live in a way when you don't know whether you're sick or whether you're well. But actually, that's the only place you can live, in between all the opposites, where there is no ground, there is no certainty, nothing's pinned down. We often feel that we're missing our own life. And the reason we feel that way is because we're trying to pin things down. Life happens in between. It happens in the uncertainty, the ambiguity, the open space. Often we feel very confined and we just want to be free. And we think it's our job, we think it's our spouse, we think it's our upbringing, we think it's our parents. But actually, what is holding us in is actually ourselves. And our own stubborn and ignorant attempt to pin things down and to have them one way or the other. When we learn to live in this tremendous uncertainty that is every moment of our life, we feel truly free. We feel unconfined. And there's room to explore everything and anything to our heart's content. Of course, we have to give something up to have that freedom. And what we have to give up is knowing anything. There's a movie called The Sheltering Sky. Bernardo Bertolucci movie. When you watch this movie, be prepared to sweat. It's very, very intense, and a lot of people can't stand it because it's too intense in a certain kind of way, horrible, sort of. And the protagonist is a woman who goes through a long journey. She loses her husband. She loses her culture. She loses her friends. She loses any sense of safety and security. And eventually it seems that she loses her mind. And without giving away the secret, because I'd love to have you all watch it someday. The moment comes when she's lost everything. And she doesn't even know where she is anymore. And somebody asks her, "Are you lost?" And she says, "Yes." And her mind is so filled with joy, and her face is so filled with joy at being lost. Truly, we have to learn how to be lost, utterly and completely. And when we do, then we are found by life, moment by moment. So if you're feeling you don't know if you're getting sick or you're okay, you're freezing cold or you're warm, I think that's the place we want to be. So I invite you to abide in that space and explore it. Because it's in that space that all the interesting and astounding discoveries can be made. And one thing I want to, certain direction I want to encourage is, I know some people are freaking out because they don't have control over certain things that they're used to having control over. And I want to encourage you to accommodate the chaos of the situation and of your situation. The chaos, it's the arena of the lineage of the awakened ones. The way in which the lineage or the awakened state communicates with our ego is when there is a certain amount of chaos. Our problem is, especially in the modern world, that we are so fixated on eliminating chaos from our lives. And we have the wherewithal largely to do it, at least temporarily. And we certainly have eliminated a lot of physical chaos. We're not, we don't have any relationship with the weather anymore, most of us. We don't really have any relationship with the seasons, the movement of animals, the life of the vegetal world, all of the continual changes that human beings have had as part of their existence for tens of thousands of years, we have actually gotten rid of in the modern world. And of course, the thing about chaos is that the lineage is always going to find ways to get through to us, no matter how much of a control freak we may be personally or we may be as a culture. The awakened ones, the unseen world, you could say the spiritual energy that is at the basis of human life is always going to find a way to get through to us. And so what we find in the modern world is the big arena of chaos is our state of mind and our emotional problems and our family problems. That's where it comes through. If you have spent any time with indigenous people, they have a lot of chaos in their lives, but it's mostly physical. At least the ones that haven't encountered the modern world too much. It's mostly physical. And, they were always on the edge of starvation, and they never knew what the next day was going to bring, and especially hunters and gatherers, they were always so much in communication and dialogue with their environment, and they were very dependent on what went on around them. That was where their chaos came. And it was interesting that They looked at the natural world, they looked at the animal world, they looked at the vegetal world, they looked at the terrain of their life, the mountains, the rivers, the winds, the weather, and they regarded those as sacred. And they regarded those what they call the ancestors. The spirit of the spirits of all of their, you know, they didn't look at their world and say, God, you know, we hate this. We hate the mountains. We hate the rivers. We're going to control the weather. We're going to control the animals. We're going to domesticate the plants. No. For them, the chaos and the change and the uncertainty of that whole way of life was sacred to them. And they read in that things that they deeply needed as human beings to make the human journey and to become genuine human beings and to fulfill their own life. And I invite you to look at the teeny, weeny little chaos that we have here as the communication of the lineage to you. Open your heart, open your mind. If you don't have hot water, look into that situation and see how it completely freaks you out. Hey, I can't take my normal morning shower. I don't think I can handle this. I'm leaving. Or the heat's not so good. My feet are cold. I'm on the phone to the bus station. Our problem is, in the modern world, we have been given the impression that we can control everything. And to control everything is death. One reason we came to Crestone is the lineage said to us, if you go to Crestone, you're going to lose control. And we are going to be in charge. Now, of course, part of us, my wife and I and our community, part of us goes, well, we don't want to do that. I mean, of course we want to be in control. On the other hand, we began to realize that there's something deeper than being in control, which is losing control. If you believe that the world is a bad place and that human beings are defective, which is largely our Western tradition, then you're going to go, well, we have to stay in control. We have to fend off the badness of the world and the evil, fundamental evil nature of human beings. It's all about control. But if you believe that the world is sacred and that human beings are fundamentally deeply, fundamentally good, and that the only problem is that we're cut off from that sacredness and we're cut off from that goodness, and that something is trying to get through to us, then Crestone is the place to be. Because the chaos here, in my experience over the last year, is filled with promise and filled with gifts for us. You see, it's not just a matter of giving in to, you know, chaos is just the destruction of everything. No. Within chaos, there's wisdom. Within chaos, something outside of our little cultural and personal ego is trying to get through. So let's all realize that we've been brought up to be control freaks, all of us, and that that's our problem. And let's accommodate the chaos. And from one point of view, my little precious ego doesn't like that tornado coming into my life. But on a much deeper level, I'm so grateful. So please don't be afraid of the chaos and the uncertainty and the fact that we can't control the situation. The dishwasher is broken down. One of the plugs in one of the drains is plugged up in the kitchen. There's only one telephone. I can't get through, you know, when I'm at home. Please let's open our hearts and open our minds and realize all of the uncontrollable things somebody, to put it metaphorically, is trying to get through to us. And we need someone to get through to us. In the old days, in this lineage, a lot of people lived in monasteries, or they lived in what was in Tibet, you know, relatively comfortable homes. They were warm, they had enough food. And their teachers, in order to teach them, would take them up into the mountains and they would live in caves. And they didn't have to live in caves. I mean, they could have built nice, comfortable, warm houses. They lived in caves. They only ate one meal a day, and they suffered. But somehow, in that situation, the teachers felt, you know, I can... I mean, these students, they're good students, but, you know, it's too easy. And somehow, when they feel like they can control everything, I can't teach Dharma. So these teachers would take them up into the caves in winter, freezing cold, not enough food, and then they go, I can teach Dharma now. I can get through to my students. There was one famous teacher in the 19th century who, after students would be kind of on their own, okay, we're going up to the mountains, and I'm going to teach you in this big cave, and you guys figure out where you're going to live. It's up to you. You figure it out. So they would go out and wander around and try to find some, you know, little hole in a rock or under, you know, roots of a tree or something, and they would set themselves up, and then the teacher would go after a couple of weeks, you know, you're too comfortable. We're moving. And you hear some of these stories. The students are going, well, this guy's crazy. What is he trying to do, kill us? Well, he was not trying to kill us, but what he is trying to do is create an environment in which the Dharma can be taught. It's so interesting that, and what is the Dharma? The Dharma is just truth. It's not doctrine, it's not religion, it's reality. The teachers are trying to open our eyes to the reality of ourselves and of our world. That's all they're trying to do. You might think that the more plush the situation, the easier the whole situation would be, and the easier it would be to teach Dharma. If the dishwasher wouldn't break down, it would be easier to teach Dharma. If we didn't have to, you know, wash our hands and shave in freezing cold water, it would be easier to teach Dharma. But actually, strangely enough, I have to tell you that what I have found is if the situation is too set up and too easy, you actually can't teach Dharma. I spent 28 years teaching at the University of Colorado where it's all set up. Everything's taken care of. No problem. You want some, you ask for it. As a teacher, you know, couldn't teach Dharma. Couldn't do it. You know, it's one of the things that you will, I don't know if you've figured this out yet, but down here, not only is the physical situation more uncertain, more open, who knows, but the staff are all practitioners. These are all people who, in their own way, hold the lineage of the practicing tradition. And it makes a huge difference because then everything that occurs is taken as the path and taken as the Dharma. And so I'm encouraging you also in that same direction. Whatever happens in this dhatan, I encourage you to trust it. And I encourage you not to trust the little voice that says, this isn't what I'm expecting and therefore I quit. I'm leaving or I'm going to stay in bed all day. I'm not going to relate to the situation because I'm not getting what I want. And you have to realize that what we want is not what we want, strangely enough. Isn't that interesting? I want, I want, I want, and that's actually not what we really want or what's going to satisfy us. It's like if you've ever read the Narnia books by C.S. Lewis, we have the impressive figure of the White Witch. And the thing about the White Witch is she gives you what you think you want, which in this case is Turkish delight. It's like this candy. You think you want the Turkish delight, which feeds you and makes you kind of forget your pain and makes you kind of, you know what candy does to you? It does this weird kind of thing where you have a few moments of apparent satisfaction and happiness. And this is what the White Witch gives people, but the White Witch is actually your biggest enemy. What, you know, and the whole, the first book, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which I strongly recommend is one of this whole Narnia series is one of the great spiritual classics. People say it's Christian, but it actually belongs to all traditions. There's so much profundity there. And basically, the whole thing is dealing with the white witch, which we have a white witch in us that wants to feed ourselves and make ourselves feel comfortable and sleepy and stupid. And the problem is it leads, that's the beginning of the road, but the end of the road, which is pretty short, is incredible amount of suffering and confusion and despair. So we're all dealing with the white witch in ourselves. We are the white witch. We just want to have it comfortable and nice and easy. But the thing is, the Dharma can't be heard in that kind of a situation. So the coordinators and I were meeting this morning and we were talking about this, and I was saying, you know, right now it's the white eagle, but maybe next year it's going to be up in the mountains in some cave somewhere. And the thing is, we have to do whatever we have to do personally in order to hear the truth, in order to discover who we are. Who are we fundamentally? That's why we're here. And that's what our life is about. And whatever it takes as individuals and as a community, we have to do that. There's a 19th century, actually late 18th century, Hindu saint named Ramakrishna, some of you know about. And he met, in the course of his life, he met this guy who was dressed in rags, and you know, he smelled bad because he never bathed, had long hair, probably had lice in it. And this guy roamed eating from garbage heaps. And when offerings would be made at feasts, you know, a patron would give feasts, the important people got the best food, and then the middle people, and then the poor people, and then the dogs would get what was left over. And this guy was actually the end. That even the dogs, you know, he was after the dogs. What the dogs wouldn't eat, he ate. And Ramakrishna said this was an enlightened person. This person was absolutely and totally realized in a way that even Ramakrishna wasn't. And Ramakrishna's biggest fear, he said, my biggest fear was that someday I'd be like him. Because life asks us, if we're lucky, life asks us to make a certain journey with ourselves. And all of the stuff we hear about success means having security and money and a good retirement plan, that is all backwards. The people who are really blessed are the people that life asks to make the full human journey and to come to some profound understanding of who they actually are. And if we find ourselves as those people, we are the luckiest people on the face of the earth. Because everybody else ends up shortchanged. And I do believe, as I was saying yesterday, we are here because we are those people. That's why we've come here. That's why we've been called. We're called to a deeper, more challenging, more fabulous, and ultimately more satisfying journey than usually happens in human life. And we're so blessed. So let us share the journey, and let us share the chaos, and let us have a sense of humor about all of it, and how much we want things to go our way, and how much they don't, and how much blessing there is in that situation when they don't go our way. If you're a practitioner in the way that we are and are going to be during this month, then we can receive those gifts. And that's actually, in a way you could say, that maybe is one of the most important things about meditation as a practice. It allows us to relax, to work with ourselves, and to open our mind so that we can actually see and appreciate and receive the gifts that life is giving all the time in the form of chaos. The problem with not practicing is we can't receive the gifts. And we spend much of our life trying to fend off the voice of reality, the voice of sanity, the voice of the lineage. So we meditate in order to appreciate and see this goodness. If our mind is in an attitude of control all the time, what happens is that all of these gifts that life gives us are interpreted as being bad
being threatening and being things that we need to either destroy or eliminate. What a terrible tragedy. Life still works on us, and ultimately it kills us. That's how it works. But we don't realize the human existence we have, and we spend our whole time fighting ourselves and fighting the true kindness in the universe. But if we do meditate, we're able to open ourselves, and we're able to receive those gifts, and life becomes, we appreciate our life as an unending stream of blessings and opportunities and openings, and our mind expands, our body relaxes, and we truly, I wouldn't say enjoy life, because it's much stronger than that. We take joy in it. We take joy in our human existence. So, again, I thank you all for being here and being willing to enter into this way of being and way of practicing. And yes, let us make this journey together, and let us help one another. When one of us feels discouraged or freaked out, let the others help that person. And then when that person is us, may they help us. So we have the holding of the community and the attention and confidence and love of the meditation instructors and the staff. And it just feels to me very, very workable.
Download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.